Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
I'm Clint Ruckus.
And we are recording in the wonders of my office today, since our studio is still being remodeled. I'm hoping they get the jacuzzi in. I'm looking forward to that.
I was hoping for the sauna.
Yeah, I'm more of a jacuzzi guy than a sauna guy.
You like the bubbles?
Yeah, there's something about sipping champagne in a sauna that just sounds, you know, like I've made it very nice.
Yeah.
So lots of cool stuff going on this week. Let's start things off. BS 2010 Service Pack 1.
Beta,
good call.
Beta. So this adds a lot of bug fixes. One big thing it adds back in is the help that lots of people requested back in.
We've talked about that before, yeah. How many people wanted, you know, good offline help.
Yeah, I mean, to me that seems a bit shocking, but I can totally understand if you're on an airplane and you need help, it's always nice to have it there.
Plus, I like the contextual help where you could actually hit F1 based on the keyword that you were using. So it's like enum.parse. Is that going to return an object type, or do I need to cast it, or what exactly happens there? So,
yeah,
boom, you'd be right there on that method call.
Okay. Other things, adds .NET unit support. Unit testing for 3.5 versus 4.0.
Right. The Silverlight Profiler.
Yeah.
So this is the performance tool, so you can see what's actually going on, and it's got some DirectX things going on there, DirectWrite. Check it out now. It's only available to MCN subscribers.
Yes, and there are two other big things. It breaks two things right now.
Yes, good call.
MVC Razor support RC1. Now, I guess next week they'll be releasing RC2,
mm-hmm.
and that will fix it. And it also breaks the async CTP.
Yes.
So if you're using either of those,
you may want to wait.
Be warned.
You may want to wait. And by may, I mean you should. So next thing up is Adam Guinea, friend of the show, Windows Phone 7 Tutorials for Designers. So there's a website called Toolbox.
Yes.
And Toolbox basically is a collection of tutorials for people doing design. And the cool thing is this has a bunch of Windows Phone 7 tutorials. So whether it's the Metro Design Language, how to design an application, using Blend for Windows Phone 7 applications... definitely check these out if you're looking for how to design a good UX, how to understand the Windows Phone, and make something look Metro.
Yeah.
In terms of its design.
And even if you're not a designer, I still think you should go and check these out, because it does give you a lot of good design hints and usability hints on your application.
And they have good Blend tutorials as well. So definitely check those out.
Now, if you do have a phone, you might notice that occasionally we get banding on gradients.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Robbie has gone through and created a nice, awesome script on dithering your image, so then you won't have that banding effect
so
anymore.
So if you'll see here, and we'll have the image up, is on the right side is not dithered, and you see what Clint's referring to as banding.
It's like rainbow effect.
It almost looks like waves of color. So on the left side is dithered, and it's more like, you know, little dot matrix effects. So check this out. It will flatten layers.
Yes.
So save a copy of your PSD before you use. But this is very cool and handy.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm glad somebody actually did the work here. So native extensions for Silverlight, which is our next topic. This isn't a CodeBlox project. It's on code.mscn.com, but the idea is to provide extensions into Silverlight that really use the power of Windows 7.
Yeah.
So accelerometers, all the sensor stuff, light sensor, all that good stuff.
Compass, GPS.
Music players, digital cameras.
You get the jump lists now, icon overlays, taskbar progress.
Speech recognition, webcam, video recording.
And you get text-to-speech. So basically, if it's built into Windows 7 now, you get it in Silverlight.
You may not want to make that promise. I'm sure there's some obtuse thing. I can't build a Windows service that's Silverlight, but a Windows service is headless. It doesn't have a... But you said it had it.
You get a lot of stuff. I'll make a more ambiguous claim.
Yeah, you can't make absolute claims, because developers love absolutes to find the one... The one case. The one case. That's just a flaw in our industry. Anyways, Gunnar Piedman goes through an article on... now, this isn't necessarily... this is... what I'd say, it's the, you may want to do this, or one way to do this. I wouldn't necessarily say this is the best way, but he goes through an example on an issue that he had with his machines, and what it did is provide a nice fast debug and redeploy.
Yeah.
So the idea is he could actually remote desktop into his PC, check, there's, I think it was a configuration setting that needed to be changed.
Into his server.
Yes, sorry, into his Azure server.
Yes.
And actually make the change. He could see what the exception was and go ahead and fix it directly there without having to redeploy an instance, check this stuff. So it is handy. Now, you may not want to do this for everything. Say if there was an error across 20 machines, you don't want to remote desktop into 20. But it's handy to find out what the error is and maybe redeploy to all, or depending on it, if it was just one server that was broken and so forth.
It's a quick fix. It helps instant debugging versus having to repackage, upload, let it... you know, go live, check it. It just makes life a lot easier to be able to do that.
Yeah, love it. So Scott Gu, heard of him?
No, who is this Gu person?
I think you've heard of him. talks about the Entity Framework CTP5 and really the code-first approach. So one of the things we were talking about, code-first approach, is Entity Framework is a way to program data in a database, for example, and be able to have a nice mapping, a set of .NET classes. So how do you do, I have these .NET classes and I have this database, how do we make them work together?
Yeah.
Now, most of these would take the approach of schema first or database first, where you design the database, you design the tables, and then generate .NET classes for them. Code first approach is, no, I start at my .NET class, you know, I have a product, a collection of products, you know, a category, which is its own type, and then I build a schema based on that. So that way I can change my .NET classes and dynamically update that schema.
Yeah.
So he goes through a number of the features that CTP5 bring for code-first development. Some of the cool things that I saw in here is validation. So you can actually add attributes. If you look at this code sample really closely, is the required attribute to make sure that a product name is specified and actually puts in the error message there, or that something falls within a range, like a unit price. So a unit price can't be negative. You know, it has to be at least greater than, you know, 0.01.
Yeah. Unit price has to be above zero. Can't, you know, they're not going to give away free stuff.
Yeah, so, and when you actually go to save changes back to the database, it enforces those validation exceptions, so you'll actually get a DB entity validation exception when that happens. So go through Scott Guthrie's examples and you can see, but I like the way this is working.
Yeah.
I definitely like where this is going. Algorithmia.
Yes. So the nice thing here is that they go ahead and create like graph algorithms along with the command, so undo, redo.
Yeah, if you're looking to build undo, redo, which is, you know, in every single application.
So they have already figured out the best ways of doing these things. So by leveraging the CodePlex project, you no longer have to redo all these complex algorithms, and they're already optimized. Therefore, why reinvent the wheel?
Yeah, I love that they're releasing this code. And this is the guys that build LBGen Pro. We talked about the BCL extension library last time. You know, there's sorting algorithms in there. And just in the graph space of working within a graph, there's so many different kind of algorithms and stuff in there. Being able to walk up and use somebody else's library is awesome.
Yeah, so it's under a BSD2 license. And, you know, it's cool. It's cool stuff.
Yeah, handy for anybody building my social network. I'm going to rebuild Facebook, but this time it's for cats. Next project, Greg Duncan brought this to
friend
our
of the show.
Yes, of course. VSI Builder.
Okay.
So I think one of the keys of VSI Builder is when we moved to Visual Studio 2010, they had a new installer type, which is VSIX, which is for add-ins and things of that nature. VSI, which is the one that was used for 2005, 2008, had a nice feature in that it allowed you to bundle snippets.
Okay.
The dot snippet extension, which is, you know, if you've ever typed in the word F-O-R and hit tab twice, it actually does a code spit, IntelliSense for a code snippet, if you will. Or F-O-R-R, which is the four in reverse.
Ooh.
So that way, you know, if I'm going counting down, not from 1 to 10, 10 to 1.
My favorite is the dependency property, PropDB.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people build snippets for their libraries. One example being MVVM Lite, Laurent Bunyon, who we talked about before. His library includes snippets for dependency properties specific to his. I think it's MVVM NPC.
Okay.
You hit tab and it does the entire code spit for a dependency property that works with his library.
Okay.
So awesome stuff. But for Laurent's, you had to copy and paste code snippets to a specific directory to make sure the Visual Studio knew that they were blah, 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 blah.
And we all know developers love to reformat their machines.
Yeah, it's just kind of painful. Now you can actually have a VSI installer, boom, installs all 10 code snippets, and you're good.
Yep.
So love this, and for snippet lovers, it's a must-have.
So the BidNow Azure sample has been updated. It updates it to the Azure SDK 1.3, adds in SQL Azure. The Azure storage has been updated. They added in App Fabric caching now into the application. OData was added in. Access control was added in. So it's a great example just to poke around and look and how we're recommending to do stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of these new features are available, but you start looking at the documentation for, say, App Fabric caching, you know, it's hard to go from MSDN documentation to implementations. Okay, great. You can have a ton of different properties. What's a real world example?
Yeah.
Here's a real world example of how to do App Fabric caching within an application, or to use queuing, or the right way to use table storage for, say, storing images, for example. So definitely check this out.
Yeah, and it's by Wade Wagoner.
Yeah, yeah. So graphics profiler and avatar animations.
Yes.
So the XNA team just announced a bunch of new samples and a white paper on best practices for performance for XNA Game Studio 4.
Yeah.
Their profiler basically goes through graphics, and it's actually built in C++, so you get the detailed information of what's going on within your application, so you can see in terms of, from a performance perspective, what's going on with your application.
Yep.
Second thing is, when you're building games for Xbox 360 with XNA, you can build avatar applications, meaning, you know, my mustachioed avatar can box your avatar, for example, and we could build...
You just want to take out my glasses, don't you?
Basically. Does your avatar have glasses?
Yes.
Okay.
He looks eerily like me.
Oh, really? All right. We'll have to have an avatar fight. This includes a sample of how to use those custom avatars, and includes a bunch of what they're calling an animation pack and animation rig. So the animation pack basically is
Pre-built animations.
Yeah, so you take whatever, you know, the mesh is, and then it could say hooray or you know, have the nest. The animation rig basically allows you to use a modding tool or Max Maya or these graphic tools to be able to modify the avatars. So lots of cool stuff here.
Yeah.
If you're building Xbox 360, definitely check it out.
Picks of the week.
All right.
So mine is Random Hacks of Kindness. So it's all about getting programmers out there to help out, you know, things like disaster risk management experts to help figure out, like, global challenges and create software to help respond to them. So, like, companies...
This is kind of like developer volunteers, maybe, is the right way to say it?
Yeah, yeah, your way is much, much better. And simpler.
Right, so I mean it's the idea of, hey, we can write software, why not do it to sort of help the greater good?
So this is, I kind of view this almost as the adult version of Imagine Cup, where it's all about just trying to figure out how we can...
But it's not a competition.
No, it's not a competition. Imagine Cup is a competition, but this is all about us, because, you know, programmers are expensive, and trying to help out areas that need our expertise to help develop software to fix big problems out there.
Yep.
So Microsoft's helping out. Other companies that do search engines are also helping it out. So
okay. guys that ask. Okay, good. So my pick of the week is the Microsoft Kinect 3D sensor. And I should kick this off by, a lot of times, Glenn and I do Coding for Fun stuff. Yep. People keep asking, when are you guys going to do some Coding for Fun stuff? Why didn't Brian Peake release a Kinect sensor library? We've been working and asking the Kinect team, like, what are our official stances? And the challenge is, because Coding for Fun is technically a Microsoft entity,
yep.
we can't, it would appear that we would be releasing an official library,
yeah.
even though we did it for Wiimote, and everybody loved that. Now, the community has done this themselves, and you've seen the official stance, probably, by the Xbox 360 teams. But we do, so while we're not working on Kinect yeah. samples until there is, you know, a way to program it that anybody can program it.
There is actually a .NET one on CodePlex right now.
Right, I'm just saying, but yeah. Coding for Fun isn't going to do it, but there's a lot of people doing it. There is a .NET version. This happens to be one of my favorite ones, which is a quadcopter
yep.
that actually has a Kinect sensor on it. So it's an autonomous copter that can sense the ground. It
yep.
has the ground sensing algorithm, and it can actually sense what the closest item is, which is that red dot that you see in the graphic there. So you can
yep.
see how it's actually sensing, and you can imagine this flying. And I think one of my favorite comments in here was Sarah Connor's going to freak out when she sees this a Terminator
yeah.
2 reference. So
yeah.
It looks awesome. Frankly, somebody needs to just do a spoof of this with the Terminator music.
Yeah.
And,
so, and then I saw a couple days ago Adafruit, which is embedded open source community, just released the keyboard to Big. So like they were literally running around sliding, and you could hear the background, and you saw like a keyboard overlaid on the virtual map, like right there. And then MIT just released today finger tracking.
Yeah, so
I mean, it's the amount of crazy stuff that's coming off of this is shocking. Every day it's something new and crazy.
Yeah, I love it. It's great to see people's enthusiasm. And obviously Kinect is great also to play. So I have one, and me and the missus are sadly sweating when we play it. So
yeah.
Good stuff. So that's our show, and thank you, Quint.
Thank you.
See you guys next time.